Calling the meeting to order. Today is March 11, 2015.
March 11th, really?
No meeting.
Turn one more paper over.
My apologies, I was reading the minutes from last. Today is March 24th, 2015. Don't complicate my life. It has been one of those days. Okay, I'm going to forego the public.
And a lot of it.
Okay, roll call.
Real good.
Maria Deanda?
I'm here.
Donna Riley?
Here.
Gordon Ford? Jason Gordo?
Here.
Mike Lynch?
Here.
Jim DeMartino?
Here.
Michael O'Neill? Jeff Grover?
Here.
Joan Clendenin?
Okay, announcements? Thank you. We are official.
I have one, as you probably noticed, Fred's not here. He is on a deposition, I believe, today that he couldn't miss, and Jim Oliver is filling in for him today.
You know more than I do.
Is that our only announcement? Okay, next public comment. Seeing no member of the public, I will move on to consent items.
I move to accept the consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second discussion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved. Moving right along. Number six, annual performance report.
Scotto up?
Yes.
I do the chairs here.
You're going to do the chair work.
I do the chair work now.
Oh, boy.
No, these are all different books. Oh, wrong. This is for strategic. Oh, that's Mark. Oh, I got it. There might be a couple there. Madam Chair. Before we jump into things, I want to get a sense of the time because we want to keep you on schedule. We know it's always a long afternoon. So 20 minutes be a good target?
20 to 30 minutes, yeah.
Perfect. Okay, great. It's always a pleasure to be here. The drive was beautiful from San Francisco. No rain, but what can I tell you? I'm happy to be here today. I'm Victor Himes, the CEO and CIO at Legato Capital Management. To my right is Adam Lawler. You've seen him quite a number of times. I've been looking at him for about 14 years now. And to my left, a new face, new to you, not to us, Tim Bird joined us a little more than 5 years ago. He is just been promoted to a senior research analyst. He comes with some incredible experience. I think he's been out in the industry now for about 16 years, so this is no guy that just started looking at all this today. He's had considerable experience working with Harvard Management back in Cambridge, as well as a hedge fund here in San Francisco and a number of other firms, and we stole him from the hedge fund, I think. So there you go, you're probably living a much better life, although meager. Not staying there. But we're thrilled to have him here. He's going to have a couple of comments and observations to make. And while we're on Tim, I should say, research analyst at Legato is not a stepping stone to become a member of the investment committee or to become someone important. You're already important as a research analyst. We've got three of them inside Legato right now, and the average tenure in the industry is 15 years. So these are not people that just got out of school and were working on your portfolio. These are people with seasoned experience, very much like Tim. And so a very important part of our team, and you'll be seeing more of him as the days go by. I've really got four items to talk about that relate to the firm and the firm overview, which are pretty much captured under the snapshot in front of you on page four. Some of you know that in February, Doug Porter, a member of our investment committee, left the firm for personal reasons. Doug was a member of the Legato team for about 4 years. He really was, you know, just a great friend of ours and someone we have tremendous respect for. We spent a long time trying to talk him out of his decision, but it was personal and we got it and we understood it. And so we'll miss Doug. What you should know, though, is we're now, it's odd to say down to seven, because I think we still have the largest investment team of most of the competitors in this entire space. So we've got seven people on the watch at Legato, and four of us remain on the investment committee. Three of us, as I said before, are in the research analyst area, and we're all working together and working on the portfolios inside the firm. And one of the things that has happened inside our firm that has been really a vision I know of mine and certainly Adam's over the many years is we've tried to really lever technology instead of just talking about levering technology, actually spending the money and doing it. And so really almost at Doug's departure, we were launching our FactSet-based system, which really has taken away a lot of the paperwork and the craziness and the running around trying to track people down. I can tell you that Margaret Yadala of SIS has really been on the chase. She was our first in-house visitor to be exposed to it. I think really thought it was pretty incredible. So this is my invitation to all of you when you're passing through San Francisco. We're right there near the bridge in the financial system. It's neat. It's got lots of great colors. You won't go to sleep. We'll just show you. But it's extraordinary what we've been able to build. So the new system is alive and running. And it really, it does everything from, if you could think about 31 managers that are funded, at the end of every quarter, often at the end of every month, there are things they need to send us. And, you know, you can say, send it to me. You get an email. I got to look at the email. It's not in the right format. I got to, well, guess what? It goes right into a database. It goes right into one of the seven of us. After the person has reviewed it, just so we don't have to worry about whether they were giving too friendly a review, it gets peer reviewed, sent automatically to a second person in Legato, and then it goes into the file. So it's just, it's incredible the way the system works. We spent a lot of time on it. We're very proud of it, obviously. But I wanted to share that with you and extend that invitation to all of you to join us there when you get next in the city. And really back to Adam and I, 12 years ago, we really sat down and opened the firm, but even a year before that, we developed the process. And at that time, we engaged a limited partner, and the partner's name was Forward Management. Many of you, some of you will remember this from 5 years ago when we were first hired. And Forward Management at that time was a firm, an investment management firm that was 100% owned by Gordon Getty. And Mr. Getty and I worked together for many, many years through a nonprofit performing arts organization. And he was a very big financial supporter of helping bring music into some of the most underprivileged schools in San Francisco. And I was sitting on the board of the organization that played a big role there. And that's actually how we met. So no better way to meet someone than actually doing some good things for kids and young people. And so that was how we met. When Adam and I started Legato, we had no idea Gordon owned the company that we were talking to about being a limited partner, so it doesn't get any better than that. So kind of a surprise meeting, and he realized it was us, and he said, hey, I want to be your partner. I'm telling you this because we sent an announcement out to Rick, but I want to share with everyone that Forward and Salient Partners have announced that they are going to be merging their two enterprises. And when they do that, sometime at the close of the second quarter, they will be an investment management firm that has about $20 billion in assets. And the great news about all of this is we've already sat down with both the management of Forward, the management of Salient, and we've come to an agreement that this is a wonderful time for Legato to buy its stake back and be completely owned by its employees. So things work out nicely sometimes. So we're working down that path. We've had very good conversations with Salient, and we look forward to continuing on down that path, and we'll keep you apprised as things develop down there. But we would hope sometime over the next, I'm going to say 3 to 6 months, we'll get all the dots the I's dotted and the T's crossed. The business at Legato continues to thrive despite what has been a period of huge headwinds in the active manager world in 2014. I know that's not new to many of you. During the fourth quarter of 2014, still we were retained by the City of Atlanta General Employees Pension Fund to manage a mandate very similar to yours, small cap growth. So we'll be traveling to Atlanta a little bit every now and then to handle that particular mandate, which just funded. And then on the new idea front, Legato has been approached by one of its existing clients to begin work on a private equity fund. And this particular private equity fund would focus on making minority investments in emerging managers, entrepreneurial teams, much like the ones that are in your portfolio. As did the program we undertook on behalf of CalPERS, which is now over, this program will be sustained through our existing screening intake process. So if you will, we're conducting somewhere under 500 meetings a year with managers. And in that process, as we're talking to managers, often they say to us, do you know anyone who has capital? We have all these expansion plans. We want to grow our marketing department. We want to build a technology platform that's a little more sophisticated. And so now we'll be able to pass that to another group of us inside of the firm and think about whether we want to make a private equity investment in that particular firm and help them, you know, realize all their dreams. You'll hear more about that as we go through time. We are pleased that at this point in our life, we are better equipped to handle that type of inquiry and that type of mandate than ever before. I can remember when we originally started working with CalPERS in 2006, if you can imagine this, there were three of us. We were handling that entire mandate with just three people. So Adam and I almost believe we're lawyers now, but thank God we're not. Forgive me if there are any lawyers, I'm married to one. No offense intended. Anyway, finally, I wish to thank the board and staff for your continued confidence in us. I mean, and I really mean that. The second quarter of 2014 proved to be one of the most difficult I've experienced, and I've been doing this for about 30 years and seen just about everything as a former reformed derivative guy. And that particular quarter had an adverse impact on our 1-3-5-year numbers since inception. In the two quarters that have followed that particular quarter, we made some changes to the manager lineup. Those management changes have been good ones that we have great conviction in today. And while good progress has been made, we're not done yet. So things have turned around quite well, I think, in the last two quarters. We expect there'll be a road that goes up and down, but we'll get to the end of this. And probably around June, things will look pretty good when you put them all together. So thank you very much for your patience. I'll stop there. I read from prepared notes, which is something I almost never do because, Madam Chair, I have tremendous respect for your time and the board. I can talk forever, but I won't today. But I'll stop there and see if you have any questions before we go to the board.
Victor, I have a quick question.
Please.
Are there any hiring goals or positions that are going to coincide with the extension of the private equity vehicle?
Yeah, great question. Right at the present time, we have no formal plans to hire additional people. One of the nice things about having run a program like this for 6 years is you kind of know exactly what you need. And inside the Legato team, one thing I'd like to remind the board and also everyone else about is we brought on a legal counsel just about 3 years ago that we never had the benefit of when we were running through these initial private equity deals on behalf of CalPERS. And that individual came to us with about, I think, 14 years legal experience, but more importantly, the last, I think, 7 years at the SEC. So it kind of helps nicely when you have someone coming from that organization into your organization. So we have got a very, very strong internal team, Nate. Now, that being said, we have never, I'm trying to think, maybe there's been one official search we've done in 12 years. So what we tend to do is we have lots of friends out there, and they'll call us and say, you know, there's this great person, they're over at this firm, you need to talk to them, and they really seem like they would fit into your culture. We'll talk to them, and we'll say, hey, there's something here we can have them do, and we hire them. And so that's typically what happens. I will tell you, we have about two people, well, we have two people right now that we're looking at that way right now. So we're not actively looking for anyone, but don't be surprised if we come back in 3 months or you see a note that says, hey, we've just brought this person on board, because we're always, you know, the problem I've had in all the years, and this is from the days I used to, you know, oversee $80 billion at the old Scudder, Stevens & Clark and hundreds of people around the world, whenever I really needed someone, I could never find them. And that's kind of how we got to where we are now, is that we thought, if you find a great person, you should find something for them to do. Because when you're looking for them later, you know, you go to a search firm, some of you have done this, you go to a search firm, they send you in the best of those available the day they're running the search. And we all know how that can work, and often it doesn't work out. So we've learned, look for great people all the time. And when you find them, figure out how they might fit inside your organization. And if they do, bring them on board, you won't be sorry. So that's really what we continue to do, but great question.
Victor,
yes.
I know relative to the 6 years or so that you've been with Stan Sara, 2014 seemed to be a challenging year for Legato. Can you talk about the issues that you face and then perhaps what you learned from 2014 going forward?
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because I have a friend who's a billionaire, and I met him in business school, and it's a name you'd know, but I'm not going to mention it because the records are going on. I don't want to get in trouble. But I remember when I was chairing the endowment for a Midwestern college, which shall remain nameless as well. We were talking about this person's hedge fund, and they said to me, they say he's a wonderful person, but he trains people all the time, and they keep leaving to start their own firms. That's the only problem we have. And I think that a hallmark of what I know Adam and I have always done is when we brought people in, we've always given them tons of responsibility. We've done what we wanted people to do with us. In other words, you bring a young, bright person in, give them stuff to do, give them a challenge, give them something to do. And I think what happens is sometimes you make that call and it's too early. It's just too early for them. And so what we started to do and what I personally started to do is I started to be a bit even more reflective about it. And Adam and I started the company, we wrote the process, we really did everything that we're working from today. And we realized it just takes, time does matter. So the one thing I've really learned about this is time really matters. Also, we're in an era of time where younger people have different priorities that are very different than the priorities I had when I was the same age. And you will find more that you're managing a company and a group of people, and this is not you, Tim, but you're managing a group of people where their external calendar to what they're doing at work is as important as what they're doing at work. That was not always the case. Many of you remember when you started your first job, it's like the job's everything. I mean, I would work this job, gonna be there night and day, and now it's, you're balancing all these, you know, God, I need time off, I need this, I need that. So we're managing in a complicated environment, much more complicated. But personally, I think, Rick, to your question, you know, slower progression going on, but at the same time, we'll still keep making those calls. I mean, I think that's important. With regard to the firm itself, it has been another record year in revenues. The firm's very, very strong. I'm very excited that we'll be able to take this equity piece back, because what that can now what can now occur is, currently the employees own about 10% of the company. I own about 60% of the company. You know, this isn't coming back to me. This is going to them. So I think that's a very unusual but important part of this change as well. So probably at the end of the year, I'll be coming back saying, you know, here are who the shareholders are, and they're significant ones. Hopefully that got to some of the things. But please, ask a follow-up question.
Could you kind of answer that same question, but as it relates to returns and the strategy, and how those kind of, to some extent, stub their toe?
Absolutely. And I'll let Adam join in as well.
Sure.
The interesting thing about the portfolio itself is we look at the world as a series of years together. And what we are most concerned about is when the portfolio behaves in a way that was nowhere close to our expectation range of possibilities. And so when we talk about a year like 2014, and we'll get to very specific things, there were a couple of things that we look at that year, we step back, we do a very quick introspection, you know, what happened, what do we see? And there's one really important thing that comes to my mind that happened. My greatest challenge as the chief investment officer is to prevent one very critical thing from happening: falling in love with a manager. And you can fall in love with managers too, as a board. You've probably done that or had that experience. And so in particular, we had one manager that was one of the three managers we funded when we first started the firm. And they were very small. None of our competitors had a nickel with them. They had gone through some really tough times. They'd gotten very large and they got small. They got the religion, they got all the right things. We flew up and met them. We sat there, we said, they're ready, let's go. They did some remarkable things for our clients the entire time we had them. They grew, they succeeded, all the things you would expect to happen while they're in your portfolio. And then you get to a point in time where you have to ask yourself the question. They've crossed 2 billion, You know, so now they're out of our sweet spot. We don't just immediately terminate people because they cross 2 billion. We start looking more clearly and saying, you know, have the incentives gone away? Have things changed that would cause there to be a diminution in alpha production, things like that? And they hadn't materially. But I've got to tell you, in at least one of the two cases, we held on too long. We just waited. We didn't see. We did not pay close enough attention. I did not use my power to say, I really don't care what the six of you think, they're gone. And that's really my call. And I've implemented that call 3 times in 12 years, where the whole committee said, we love them, we're staying, and I've said, they're gone, that's it. And didn't do it in this case. And so that was a huge, and it happens. You know, we built systems that help us remove our personal love and affection. But, you know, as we look back on it, we say, oh, why didn't we know this? Why didn't we see this? You know, because everything's kind of there because you see the end result. But I think if that's the point I think you're getting to, Nate, that's one of the things that contributed. And that had a big contribution to what happened last year.
In addition, we have some manager-specific issues, but mm-hmm. I think there was also some issues within the strategy and the benchmark, some areas in the market where we're typically not going to perform as well as say a peer group that's one single manager. We're in 5 different managers. There was a pretty large spread in distributions and returns from last year. So when we're doing our job and diversifying, we're going to have some good managers, and you know, and if you're in those good managers, if you have a single manager approach, that's going to perform really well. Well, we had some managers that didn't perform as well. They weren't in biotech, and biotech was a huge contributor. Now, if you look at our attribution, we actually, we on a stock-specific basis for the year, beat on our biotech selections, but the benchmark has 11-12%. We were underweight. That caused, you know, about 90 basis points of the underperformance for the year. And in addition to that, within technology, semiconductor stocks, which are very similar to how active managers look at those companies, that they're usually full of debt, no, very cyclical. If you look at our portfolio, we have a bias towards more secular long-term growth, and those two combinations between the biotech rally being underrepresented and poor stock selection within technology because of our underexposure to semiconductors caused the majority of the underperformance. Now, some of those changes that we made in the third quarter were to address some of the biotech underexposure. Both managers that we got rid of didn't invest in biotech, or very lightly. And one of the managers we brought in, Rice Hall James, has a particular expertise in healthcare and within the biotech pharma area. AMI is more of a conservative growth manager, very very similar to Riverbridge, and they're not going to have that type of exposure as well. So we're trying to mitigate some of the factors from the biotechs, which continue to rally, and they rally in down markets, they rally in up markets. It's really having the Fed funds or the rates really low is adding a lot of fuel to the fire in that mm-hmm. space. And these companies have no, many of them that are performing have no earnings, they have no revenues, and you know, an FDA approval pending. And when they either get purchased for the opportunity, so we do have a bias towards that. And over the long term, when we look at, and we're trying to beat the benchmark at with taking less risk. Now, investing in semiconductors and biotechs and overweighting those is not a way to beat the benchmark while taking less risk. And so we really, in these times, we're not gonna perform as well. But over the long run, you know, we've seen days where we've seen the biotech rally unglue for a couple days, and our alpha comes right back. It's very challenging to be beholden to some one or two factors when, you know, this is a long-term investment and we're looking for good companies to beat poor companies. When you have money just flying into the space, and it can go away just as quickly as it's come. So we're trying to tighten up our exposure to that, but we also don't want to get whipsawed because our long-term track record was built on the same philosophy of trying to beat the benchmark while taking less risk. And if you look at our statistics, that's really, you know, since inception, as we've been able to do that.
So I'm not sure I know the answer to this question. Do you have any control over the securities in your manager's portfolio, or is it like a take it or leave it, and you just manage the from the top level down?
That's a good question. Initially, when we select them and put them into their portfolio, we have control. Which manager we're going to use, we're going to look at the correlations between each of the managers, the overlap of the holdings, and determine where our coverage versus the benchmark. Because we want to drive our tracking error from stock selection, mitigate our style risk, and eliminate most of our style risk. We want to be pure to the benchmark and mitigate the industry bets. And now we can't control those because once they, you know, if you put a manager in and they all of a sudden they're at 10% biotech and they decide to sell out of them, we can't really control that. But what we try to do is find managers that have a consistent application of their process. And then when you do combine them, you know, a name might come in or out, but the structure of the portfolio should stay.
Yeah, should stay.
But if they all decided, we had in at the end of June, we were overweight energy, and then we had the energy crash during the third and fourth quarter. We're underweight energy by 1.5% now. So they tend to now we can do some things about reweighting portfolios. But when they decide, you know, we had two managers go to zero in energy. Now, did we really want to be completely, well, it was a good thing to be underweight energy in the fourth quarter because
right.
It was down 35%. So we added value that way. So we're a little bit at the, you know, at you know.
I see, yeah.
Right. And one other thing I would say is if you think about this in a single portfolio, the managers each of these managers has decided, just as we have, here's our process. Here's how we select stocks within the universe we're in. And there are certain things that either by process, experience, or just predilection, a manager will say, I've always had trouble in biotech, so I'm always going to be light there because no matter how much work I do, I can never seem to get it right. So if you have a single manager and they're half the benchmark's weight, guess what happens? Gaboom, and you'll never have that weighting. So what we love is that we can at least put those managers together with others who say, hey, I do have an ability here. So while our biotech weighting may never be 100% of the benchmark or extreme, it will at least be very close to it. So we're not sitting exposed or keeping you exposed. So that's what we're always trying to do is manage that type of risk. Sometimes the power is going to overwhelm it. Energy's done this both ways. It's just done at the downside. It did at the up. Remember the up several years ago where people just got clobbered. They just said, you know, most of the non-for-profits who said we have social screens, no energy in our portfolio, just got killed because energy just went through the ceiling. They were exposed, and that's what happens. And so we're very happy with the idea of multi-managers because we can mitigate a lot of that individual decision-making, that a single manager, basically, it's who they are. Because you take what you get, really.
So how do I read the question then of on financials that you're at 4.4 compared to a benchmark of 7.8? So do I read it that we're not in the group that thinks the interest rates are gone up and financials are going to go up?
What page are you
on? Page 13.
Is there a philosophical, or is this just, as you're indicating, kind of result of the managers don't like financials?
It's a combination, and financials within small growth is a little bit different because there's not as many banks. The banks are typically in the value portfolio. So what you have here are many data companies, processing companies, paycheck type processing. So I would say that there's less, especially for growth managers, there's less sensitivity to interest rates and interest rate risk, and these are really about companies that they can grow and maybe a read or two in here, but very little interest rate risk in this portfolio. But if it was another portfolio, you would be reading that the managers themselves don't like the rate environment and they're going to underweight it.
So that's what I was saying.
It is a little different within small growth because it's not a big part of the benchmark.
Yeah,
but. but you're reading it right, that the managers make that active decision to be underweight. We try to select managers that can help mitigate that, because we want our tracking error, our active risk, to come from the stocks that they select, not the industry exposures.
So then likewise, because of this space, we've been at lower percentage that are, say, dividend than a bigger group.
Because the general size of the relative size of the managers and the relative size of the companies. I'm
and
sorry,
the companies that they're going into.
Exactly.
So when we read the fact that the benchmark has a higher dividend payout and we don't, that's kind of a result.
That's a result, yes.
Right. And we typically are, you know, if you look at on page 15 has the dividend rates of the benchmark, which is actually really low. It's 0.96.
Right.
So these are growth companies, so they typically are.
But you're half of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Yes. It's not a dividend yield is not a component of growth, small cap growth investors'
right.
philosophies. Typically, they like cash flows, but not mm-hmm. paid out.
Yeah, and sometimes look at dividend payout, for instance, is conservative.
Yes.
And this could be interpreted if you were just looking at the general as willing to take more risk. Depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, we see it as just that there's a different nature, obviously.
Right.
The point you're getting at is a perfect segue into we have value portfolios, for example.
Right.
And they have areas that are completely the opposite of what we just described. You know,
so then
say
when
they have
we measure
component.
You against a benchmark mm-hmm. and say you are not meeting that benchmark, it has mm-hmm. to do with the marketplace and the industry area.
It has to do with the factors that are in that benchmark, and this
right.
is the right benchmark. Don't,
right.
don't get me wrong. This
okay.
is the correct benchmark, and yet at the same time, in active management, the managers themselves are going to make a judgment. They're
right.
going to say, you know, I'm looking for appreciation in stock price, much more so than dividend.
Right.
Okay, and I think that's where my bet should be. And so you're going to look at our portfolio and see that less of the return in that dividend area is going to come from our managers and the stocks they own.
And that would explain
so
how you deviate either positive or negative.
You could. Benchmark. It's not that huge of an impact because those numbers are pretty small relative. Even though we're half of it, it's not. It doesn't have that huge contribution effect on the overall, you know, portfolio.
Yeah. If it, quick, just
much
to,
more
just
in a biotech kind of a sense
yes.
where you have something
yes.
going on there. That would
yes.
be much
if
larger.
If you look on page 16, you can look at the contribution of our tracking error, and the last line has the 70% of our tracking error, the big blue line on the right hand side or stack bar. 70% of our tracking error is coming from stock selection, and 6% of our tracking error is coming from style differences. So
okay.
So we're not trying to be very different on a stylistic basis mm-hmm. And that's been fairly consistent from, except for some extreme periods in 09 when things were really extremely volatile.
How much of this chart, you can see that the line goes from the top right in a trajectory more towards the bottom left and now it's kind of in the middle, but how much of that decreases the market, and how much of that is you taking more of a conservative posture?
I would say most of it is the market. We've built our portfolios very similar, and you know, some of the changes, the big drops, were we didn't do anything to the portfolio. Mm-hmm. This is the market, and this is using a risk model, which is backwards looking, so it takes things time to incorporate what had happened into the model. And you know, sure, there's times when we've changed the manager that's adjusted our profile a little bit, but basically our structure and our philosophy has not changed since the beginning. We've always had, you know, this philosophy of having the majority of our tracking error coming from stock selection and trying to be style neutral on the benchmark and mitigate some of the, as much as we can, the industry bets, because we can't control them completely, but we can, by selecting different managers and manager lineups, we can help reduce that to an extent.
If you made a decision, I'm not saying you did, that you wanted to be in financials, but your managers aren't putting you in financials, would you do that by changing managers or talking to the managers?
Our preference would be to change the manager.
Okay.
Because what we'd be doing is taking them out of their
right.
comfort zone, and we
right.
don't ever want to do that.
Right.
So we would just have an honest discussion and say, you know, hey, it's over.
Our
goodbye.
Mix of managers is
you know,
this way. We
want
to change it to whatever.
Exactly. If I,
I'm ringing, but it's not me. So
I don't know if
this really looks at me.
I don't know what it is. Anyway, any other questions?
I have a question.
I'm on buzzer.
Yeah.
In the record.
Is that me?
Go ahead. I think it might be mine, but I actually turned it off.
Rick, in your chart and value added chart, I did, and I could be totally misreading this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you look at the value added by quarter and you total up the pluses and the minuses, we end up with a significant net.
You've seen this one.
Yes.
The bar on the right, far right hand side, that would be the cumulative value as of 12/31/2014.
So for the last 5 years, we have lost
That's
compared to an index.
That's excess returns minus manager fees and minus custodial fees as well.
How does this compare with our other investments?
You mean the other managers?
Yeah.
We actually Legato is probably the only one that's below the horizontal axis.
So. What conclusions should we draw from this? Over what time period does this need to continue before we reach a conclusion?
Well, Legato is currently on watch. We put them on watch last September, and we've worked out something with Legato to mitigate some of that having to do with fee structure. And that started this quarter, I believe, mm-hmm. not last quarter. So nothing you see on here reflects any of mm-hmm. that change to the returns or the results.
Do we know what the last quarter is going to be like for 2014?
What do you mean?
The end of the year.
That's on
yeah.
here.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's
actually. Yeah. Oh, I see.
But that's still under the old structure. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is whatever the board's pleasure is at this point in time,
right.
we can discuss.
Said another way, what's your reaction?
It's unusual for us to have a cost that we're not negotiating, controlling, or adding to our performance. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's uncommon. I've done this 30 years and actually sat in your position. And if I'm dealing with a custodian, what I'm doing is I'm working them down across my entire portfolio as low as possible.
Right.
Because there are certain parts of anyone's portfolio, whether they be emerging markets or small cap, where the cost of trading are far higher, so you want to just be beating them to death. So normally, if we were in control of that, we would be, kind of beating them to death. And so
that's a good point. That
yeah,
I forgot to mention.
So that's out of our control.
We have in the change of custodian banks, we negotiated custodial fees more than 50% lower than what we were paying
yeah.
before, and this really hasn't incorporated fully that aspect of it. So I think that what you'll see is you're definitely going to see custodial fees trend downward, not just for Legato, but for everybody. But in particular, more for Legato,
exactly,
cap prospects,
area.
And our international
mm-hmm.
managers as well, because they seem to do more moving in and out of
yeah.
some of these securities than
right.
the rest do. So you will see some differences. I don't know how much lower the custodial fees are going to go, because they're not extraordinarily high to begin
right.
with anyway.
Right.
Rick, wasn't the discussion last time was let's give it a couple quarters and if it doesn't significantly change,
mm-hmm.
then
we
make our decision.
It has, absolutely.
A 1 year period, even a quarter or two, if you look at the rolling returns, it looks like 2010 and 2014 were really the only years where there was gross underperformance, right? And there could be a two quarter period in 2014 that drags that chart substantially lower, because we're just looking at a line graph, right? Cumulative. Everywhere else, it seems like they've generally beat the index or the benchmark. My question would be, what do we pay you to do what the benchmark does?
You don't, and that's a very good point. And what we're not able to see the custodian side of it. I think your point's very well taken. And so our Bible is, we say 09 net beat the benchmark just about 300 basis points.
Yeah, 3%.
2010 underperformed by about 300. 2011 beat the benchmark by a few. 2012 beat the benchmark by 300. 2013 beat the benchmark by a couple hundred. 2014, tough year, about 300 under. So our vision is about risk and return over the long period. And so we would look at this and say, you're going to have years like this. we've been doing this a long time. This is not, and my in chairing investment committees, my worst meeting, there are two. This meeting and the meeting when private equity is killing every other asset class, because I have exactly the same discussion. Everybody wants to put the whole portfolio in the private equity, or everyone wants to shoot everybody in the room, and they're both wrong. and so that's for the chair the toughest time. And that sounds very self-serving, but you probably remember when we first came in, and I think our counterpart was 1,000 over and we were 700 over. I was the guy that said, remember this, because it'll never happen again, and this is not, you should be thinking about the reverse. Them being under 1,000, us being under 600, and would you rebalance back? Because that's what you should be doing.
Well, my question really is, we can buy a benchmark for just a few basis points.
Exactly.
What do we pay you to do what the benchmark does?
You pay us to net of fees beat that benchmark, and our target is 200 to 300 basis points, and we've had a very difficult year that's put that at risk. But what I can tell you, having done this as long as I've done it, is it's a snapshot in time.
Yeah, and like I said, one or two quarters could impact a 5-year number or since inception number.
Exactly, right.
But we do have a good track record since we've done business since 2008.
Right.
You know, we have some pretty good road behind us. To see that you always just kind of come back to the benchmark.
Well, a good time, I think, to look at this would be go to the end of 2013 in December. Because that's not a long time ago. And just say, what did it look like? And I don't know the numbers offhand, but just look. Because, you know, that's the power of the numbers and just time. And if you choose an arbitrary moment in time, things can look very different. And so, you know, it's something we think about all the time. And yet we know that really it has to be a long term, and this is exactly the kind of discussion we expect to have. We expect to have it on the upside just as we expect to have it on the downside. It's a valid question.
My only adjustment to what you're saying is that we're paying you not to select stocks that will do this, but we're paying you to select managers which will manage the stocks to do it.
That's correct.
And if you select the right 5 or 6 managers, you do well. If you don't, then that's the consequence. And so you have to have confidence that these managers are putting you in the right space.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct.
And one of the added benefits of doing it in the multi-manager structure as the single manager is, sure, you might get that home run manager, and you, but the other side of the trade is not a welcoming experience. And by doing a multi-manager, you're mitigating that volatility. That's really, I mean, it's another part, if you look in some of the statistics, is that we've been able to do this and take a lot less risk than the benchmark.
But what I find disturbing, and I don't know if that's the right word, is should you decide you want to do something dramatic to change things, the way you would do that is to change managers.
Sure.
Well, you wouldn't go to the manager and say, hey, I don't like you being in this space, I want you to be in that space. That's not your style.
No.
Your only way is to say, I have confidence in these managers, or I don't, and I'll change managers.
Right.
Okay.
And we've spent a long time understanding, and I literally ran direct portfolios, billions of dollars for institutions, for 10 years of my life. And the last thing I would ever want to do is have a client come in and say to me, Victor, it's been a tough year. You know, why don't you do something new and different that you've never done before? Fix it. I mean, I'm sorry, I just say, you know, something.
Is that what we hired
please,
for?
Yeah. Don't. I mean, no. We would never want a manager to do that. We would say, you know, if this is not the right fit or working, we need to, you know, make a move. So, good question. But probably taking a little more time than.
I think we're ready to move forward.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And with that, any more questions?
Any more questions?
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Interesting presentation today. Interesting or interactive?
No, they've been actually pretty good.
First time I ever met the CEO. 4 years.
Well, they tend to only come out when there's...
Blood in the water?
Problems to solve.
Well, he was good last year, though.
Yeah, that's right. He made Oakdale.
Well, that's been a couple of years.
They haven't been too well. You look at them compared to...
Your capital.
They were the weak sister for them.
Still one.
So I think what one of you said, I think that's what we're gonna do, is I would imagine it's gonna be in the next couple of months, because it's been November of last year.
Yeah, long about July or August, whenever we see the report for the first two quarters.
Well, he never did answer that, how much do you make, or...
That was intentional.
Oh, I know that was intentional.
I don't think he wanted to spout it off, but the number's right on that sheet.
Yeah.
It's right there.
So as Nate said, do we want to have a discussion regarding this, or wait until...
I think we've already plotted as much
as we can. Heard what you wanted to hear?
Let's see what happens.
Well, we have it set for the summertime, though.
Well, that's the thing, we could look at this in a few months, or we can just do it when we look at our portfolio again, we do our asset liability study.
That's prudent.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be done right this instant.
We've got a lot of things vying for our attention right now.
Yeah.
So with that then...
I mean, if I can make one comment, if you look at the portfolio now looks a lot, is different in terms of the structure now than it was through the year when they had the problems, because they've got 40% new managers effectively. So, and if you look at the performance of the managers they have, the ones they kept has had the good performance, the ones that obviously detracted last year are actually no longer with them. So they have made changes. So they've already kind of fired the ones that caused their own problems. So they've reacted to their own underperformance.
As they should.
Right.
Well, my only point would be, guys, it's 5 years, tick, 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 tick.
It's a good discussion.
You get like second chances in certain things, but...
And if anybody wants to agendize that for an earlier time before October, November, then let's do it, if that's what you want to do.
I'd like to see us discuss it in June, when we have the first quarter numbers in, and we're getting ready to look at the second quarter numbers. Because honestly, waiting all the way till October, to me, that seems like a long time. Do you guys agree, or do you not want to...
I mean, manager evaluation is a continuous process.
Do you want to wait till October, or do you want to look at it earlier?
I don't think October. I think that as soon as the returns are in for the first two quarters, which is going to be
July.
Just the next
July.
Month.
We wouldn't know in August then.
Yeah.
We could have a discussion in August if you'd like.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, August.
Very good.
5 months. We won't know for 5 months how we're doing with these guys.
No. Well,
but they won't either.
Well, no, we'll know in May how they did for the first quarter.
There's two things at play here. One, they have made some changes. They've turned over two of their managers, I think. And we do have a different fee structure, both on the managerial side and the custodian side. And their performance has been right there at the benchmark net of fees for a while. So it's not necessarily hurting us to stay in there, you know, it's not hurting us to stay in it for a few more months if they're working right at the benchmark.
Yeah, but we want our managers to do more than that.
Absolutely.
And these guys have them for 5 years.
Well, I'm going to risk sticking my already long neck out. At the end of 2013, since inception of the relationship, they had made money for this plan.
They just haven't made it more than
2014. 2014. No, they did. More than the index.
If you look at the cumulative chart, it's right. It's been volatile.
It depends on what December you pick, though.
Well, exactly.
December 13, they made money. December 11 and 12, I think they were.
But year to date, year from the inception to the date of the fund, according to the chart that Rick's team manages.
That's correct.
We were sitting here December 31st, 2013. They had net of everything. They provided dollars to this plan.
Yeah.
And last year was miserable. The benchmark, the index, on a peer comparison, the benchmark ranked 33rd percentile. The benchmark destroyed.
Nate, you're right, but I mean, I can argue that if you look at it from March 2013, that's 3 years, 3.5 years, and they were underwater at that point in time.
Yeah, it's just, I'm just, like I said, my neck is thin and long as is, but there was a point in time to date that they had a value, and this is definitely the worst of it.
Can you summarize why? In other words, sometimes you can say the oil crash hit things. In their space compared to their benchmark, what was it? Is it what he said, we weren't in biotech?
I mean, that's the true answer, right? But they're picky managers. The only decision Legato makes are which managers are going to be in their roster. And they had underperforming managers that they have since fired. And replaced. Well,
when do we get the next quarter's report in May?
Yes.
Will you just tell us then what it is, and so we can then decide if we want to...
Let's just
yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's every month they go through every one of the.
Yeah, you get an update every month with the flash report. You see how Legato did. You already got how they've done for the last couple of months.
Okay.
All right, so it should take me about 12 minutes, and I'll work through both the February performance report, and we'll work through the manager top 10 report.
We're in a feisty mood, Nate.
No interruptions, 12 minutes. I can't promise. I'm ready for it.
Okay.
Well, just to start off, there's five kind of key themes I'm going to highlight as we kind of look at the markets ending February 28th. And the first is a real positive. U.S. job growth has been strong. And from a global standpoint, this is probably the strongest engine or green shoot we can see looking out there. The other side of that coin is that the Fed is, through language and soon enough through actual tightening, they're beginning to turn the screws on the easy monetary policy that has been in place now for going on 7 years. This has implications. The first and foremost is its rippling impact on the third bullet point, and that's the strong dollar. The strong dollar hurts three entities in particular. It hurts the international development trade partners, who are trading with overseas that are now having to trade in dollars with a weaker currency. It hurts U.S. multinationals, those companies that are doing business abroad and getting transactions in foreign currencies. And lastly, it hurts emerging markets. There is a number of sovereign and corporates that are coming due that have issued bonds and issued debts in U.S. dollars a few years back, and that interest payments are coming due now. It's coming down the pike. And for the emerging markets, this is the strong dollar is going to be a significant headwind as far as their ability to manage both their currency volatility and also their business. The other theme that has not gone away, and that's the oil market. Oil prices continuing to drop. Although in California, I'll just let you know, having been on the East Coast last week, paid $2.15 a gallon.
Don't even brag.
That's a lot better than what's happening here.
You know, it's interesting that they're blaming part of the maintaining the higher cost here in California on one of the refineries who blew up, but
John
it was already
was
out of commission
it, right.
for repairs. So,
yeah.
Well, there was a
wink and a gun.
There exactly. was a strike kind of nationally where the select refineries. So there were like two or three in California, so I don't know if they took more capacity out of California than nationally, but one of the things but that just got settled like last week or the week before. So that excuse, all capacity, kind of California capacity should be coming on.
So is that strategic, do you think? Okay, I'm reaching here kind of in terms of keeping the prices high domestically or raising them a little bit higher domestically?
That's hard to say.
Tough question.
I'm a conspiracy theorist.
Well, I mean, I go back to my oil. I was actually, the last time there was a refinery strike, I was an engineer in Cleveland and actually ended up being, quote unquote, a short-term scab. I shouldn't admit to that, I'm sure. But that was a long time ago. But that was the last time there was a strike like that, of similar nature. So I can't say that was 35.
Neither
years
confirm
ago.
Nor deny the situation.
I don't think the 95 cents of taxes we pay on each gallon helps.
Well, that might help, but
that's a lot.
Isn't that about what it is?
The tolls are more expensive on the East Coast, though. To get across the Delaware, I think
absolutely.
It's like $17.
Connecticut's the worst. You pay going into the county, you pay going out of the county.
You should just stay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there's a few real takeaways from the low oil prices. We hear experts, I'm not putting my quotations up now, I did. Experts say that, you know, neutrality or something that's maybe fair market price in the $60 to $70 range based upon supply and demand metrics, but that's hearsay. We hear similar people also say you could see this flush down, the market kind of experience very low $30 price. And if that's the case, that's going to have a ripple effect through our economy and specifically through one of the largest drivers of employment working in the energy sector. And we look at the Wall Street Journal and they graduate new students into the workforce for many, many years. Business services, financials, the sector, that was the top seat. But over the last 4 to 5 years, it has shifted. And now you see those graduating with degrees in thermotechnology, different engineerings that specifically oriented to the energy fields, that's where students are going. So to see somewhat of a pause in that employment cycle where we see layoffs starting to happen at a faster clip, we're yet to have experienced the full ripple of lower oil prices. Silver lining is it helps homeowners temporarily, households. They have extra cash in their pocket. Whether they spend it or not, we'll see. But it's the one and only silver lining that we're experiencing to a certain extent. The bad is outweighs the good. And start by looking at the European Union. While the Fed is tightening here domestically, the ECB has finally begun to turn on the spigot, and easing has begun as of March 9th of this month. The ECB is purchasing securities, both public and private, in the market to provide a certain level of stimulus. And by nature, that is forcing money towards riskier assets. In many cases, negative nominal yields exist throughout the Eurozone. When you can, we mentioned last month, get a yield in the low 1% for an Italian note, and the US you can get something 50 basis points higher. It's forcing assets towards riskier assets.
And that, you said negative nominal, or do you mean negative real?
Negative nominal.
Something that everybody, if you will go back to your business school or your economics class, the one thing they said would never happen is negative interest rates, because you take the money and you put it in your mattress and you have more money in 3 months. Versus putting it, giving to the government, and they say, okay, I give you $100, and in 3 months I'm going to give you $99.
How do you trap capital with negative?
People are doing it. It's just, yep. They're charging fees to say, well, I'm going to keep your money safe for you.
It happened on the 10-year Treasury in October of 2008. U.S. Treasury.
Yeah.
Negative nominal?
Yeah, broke the buck.
It's interesting what psychologically that says about how few people feel.
Right.
It's just their government. Give me less in the future than I'm giving you today, and inflation, I don't care about.
In other words, I want security so bad,
I'm willing to take less in the future.
Right.
I'm paying you basically to keep my money safe.
Because if I put it in the mattress, somebody might steal it.
Or if you put it in the Greek bank, somebody
might. Well, that I understand.
Put Iceland too.
Put it in the German bank, they'll give it to Greece.
Yeah. Well said.
Interesting discussions yesterday.
What was that 12 minutes doing, Nate?
It's gone. To the Greek bank.
Two over.
But we have fun.
That's right. Well, I'm gonna finish this off by being more dreary and just highlight the fact that these distortions, which we're talking about right here, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but these are, by definitions, distortions in the market. Are wrecking havoc, and it's encouraging a desperate search for yield. And we're seeing this when we look at assets such as high yield, real estate, the art world, tech ventures, all of which are being valued at prices that many years ago we would consider astronomical. I think a takeaway to this is volatility and caution. Expect both of those things to exist in the future, and we should really be somewhat fearful of volatility and implement caution when we think about decision making going forward. There's a lot to be concerned about.
Well, I mean, having said that, I mean, as we again chase returns over the long run for sure, but how do we keep our money safe now to avoid going that big drop, potential drop?
Sure, that's the right question.
You know, so
you put it in the bank at negative yield.
Well, or the mattress, you know, but, you know, obviously.
I mean, that's
the figure.
That's what everybody's looking at right now. Right. This is, you know, there is no, quote-unquote, cheap assets by what most people will say. is, you know, bonds are expensive, equity markets not, you know, not really, maybe not real expensive depending on your point of view. Nothing is, comes out and says, that's where I should be putting my money. There's some people, so there's some people now that are saying, well, actually, you know, given what Nate was saying, that, you know, outside the U.S., maybe now is the time to be putting more money to work there. So there's a variety of debates, but looking in the U.S. especially, it's nothing is inexpensive.
I think there's a practical, is there a practical action we can consider at this table, and that's sticking to the plan that's in place. And now is probably a fantastic time to consider rebalancing and doing so with some of these themes that John just highlighted. And Rick has also really been on top of as well.
How much are we willing to pay for a work of art?
Depends on who.
We're not in that space.
Yet.
Yeah. So with that, those are the themes that kind of really been existing, been affecting the markets pretty significantly. I'll pause for any other questions. If there's anything that you'd like to discuss, if not, we'll get into the portfolio and we'll look at performance for the month of February. So on the first page, we have the market, the monthly market update. Growth trumped value. We saw January start the year off with negative absolute returns, and we see February having come back quite strong. The Russell 3000 up 5.8% for the month. When we look at the large cap stocks, the Russell Growth 1000 up 6.7, Russell Value 1000 up 4.8. Pretty significant divergence between the two, but again, growth also trumping in the small cap space. Small cap growth up 7.2, whereas value up simply 4.6. The bottom three lines of the first sections, the REIT, commodity, and gold, all had reversals of fortune in the month of February. You see the REIT composite, which had been a Trojan horse, finally pressed the pause button and returned 3.58% for its index, whereas the commodity index, which had been quite negative for the full year, produced a positive return, 2.58 index for the index. And gold also giving quite a bit back, 5.2% for the month. If you follow your eyes over to the one-year column, you see the longer term, I say longer term, 12-month theme, and you see REITs still being very positive with that short one-month negative performance at a 24% 12-month return. And then you see the commodity index down 22, almost 23%. And so those two spaces have really been somewhat of a yin to the yang, and a place that's going to capture headlines quite a bit going forward. Moving down to the middle section, we see the international space participating with the strong equity markets. Both the ACWI World Index ex-US and the ACWI World and the EFI developed market up between 5% and 6%. Emerging markets up around 3.1% for the month. Something interesting, if you look at the one-year column, you see the ACWI ex-US, the top line, 1.31%. You see the MSCI ACWI World Index, 8.11%. The difference there really between the two, as the title suggests, are the US. So the addition of the U.S. on that one-year return offers around 700 basis points of additional absolute return. And you can see that the international space had a tough 2014 and is beginning to reverse that trend for the first 2 months of 2015. Looking at the last section, as we look at fixed income, we see that the Barclay Aggregate gave up roughly 1% for the month. And we see the high yield index bouncing back quite strong, 2.4% for the month. You see that the emerging markets also at 1.25%, and again the dollar playing some influencing their returns there in that sector in the emerging market global bond index. Pause for any questions. We'll get into the portfolio. Page two of the portfolio. Page one is simply a repeat of the previous page I was looking at. We look at asset values. So the total fund coming in at $1.834 billion. We see the domestic equities, roughly 48.6% of the total portfolio. International equities, 17.3%. This is a place that offers opportunity for rebalancing. You can see over our target, domestic equities have run significantly. 2014 was a very good year for domestic equities. Our portfolio did very well as a result. Those overweights helped us. Now is the time to consider pulling back and allocating to other asset classes, rebalancing and considering opportunities. We see the two spaces below in real estate and direct lending still ramping up in real estate, and our direct lenders around 5.3%. That will also be a future area of discussion. Page 3, this looks at the change in asset value from both prior month and prior year. Over the month, the fund added roughly $65.7 million net of expenses and fees and benefits. Prior year, it's added $101 million, a strong 12-month performance, roughly just under 6% change over the trailing 12-month period. Page 4 looks at total fund performance for the month. The fund returned 3.83% versus a policy index of 3.37%, or 46 basis points of outperformance. If we go down the line, we see the BlackRock 1000 growth roughly flat down a basis point. Jackson Square up 62 basis points to its index, reversing trend in January, where it was down 160 basis points. BlackRock 1000 value up 2 basis points, tracking appropriately. Dodge & Cox up a strong 1.53% for the month, likewise reversing trends of January, where it was down almost an equal 1.52%. Legato down 68 basis points, and year to fiscal date down 34 basis points. Where on the other coin, you have Capital Prospects up 1.49% for the month, and fiscal year to date up 237 basis points. Quite a strong performance.
Is your excess returns here, is that net of fees?
These are gross of fees.
Okay, and then in the past we had, we used to have the peer ranking also.
So we'll do that on the quarterly reports. Okay. They're not available monthly.
Okay.
Page 5, we have the Mellon S&P 500 index tracking accordingly, roughly flat on an excess return basis to the S&P. We look at the international managers, LSV and Pyramus. LSV up a strong 114 basis points for the month. On the other side of the coin, Pyramus down 54 basis points for the month. You can see together they combined to produce roughly 30 basis points of outperformance for the month, and fiscal year to date around 70 basis points. Reminder, both those managers have a different style. While they're benchmarked to the same index, one has a growth, one has a value bias. So to see one manager outperform and underperform in a given month, to some extent, that makes sense, and we would expect that as such. Looking at the fixed income space, we have two managers there, Dodge & Cox and PIMCO. Together, the index achieved 49 basis points of outperformance, although on an absolute basis, gave back 45 basis points. You can see the Barclays Aggregate Index down 1 basis point. Year-to-date, the index trailing its year to fiscal date index is trailing 54 basis points to that Barclays Ag. Look at real estate, as mentioned, gave up some of the month of February, down 1.6% compared to the index there, 3.5%. We benefited by having some of our index not fully called. As we look on the next page, we have both American Strategic Value Realty and Greenfield Gap, both coming online. Performance now for the month perspectives will lag. Now when we look at real estate, because we have private investments, we're really going to need to wait for that quarterly report, and that's the frequency at which these managers provide returns. We'll give you kind of a look back once that happens, but from a month-to-month basis, we're really just looking at cash flows and how that's added to the market value at the end of the previous quarter. And lastly, direct lending, tracking its index there, 72 basis points, and you can see the asset values for each of the managers in our direct lending roster. Pause there. We'll begin again into manager top 10. So this takes a look at the top 10 holdings for each individual manager, the weightings of those top 10 holdings, and the performance of those stocks compared to the index, about through a 15-day period of the month of March. See the BlackRock Large Cap Growth Manager have four holdings trailing its index, while six are outperforming. Microsoft stubbing its toe on growth prospects, but otherwise as expected. We look at large cap value. Other side of the coin, value has struggled so far today a little bit. Seven stocks down at the top 10, three up. ExxonMobil lagging, we understand why. Stancera, S&P 500, three stocks up over the last 15 days, seven down, same thing. You see the same stocks for the most part in the previous two managers. Dodge & Cox having a pretty strong month to date out of the top 10 holdings, seven managers up. versus three that are down. Bank of New York Mellon, this is a name that I've seen quite a bit come up with different managers out there that really seem to like the way this stock looks from a valuation standpoint. Jackson Square, about 50-50, four stocks up through the first part of the month. Allergan has been a really strong performer for quite some time, and it's been one of the top holdings with this manager for over a year. Capital Prospects, 50-50, five stocks up to down versus its index. Hillebrand also has been one that has been the top holding for Cap Prospects for quite some time. It down quite a bit this month relative to the index, but very volatile stock. We would expect that not necessarily noteworthy. Legato, same thing, five stocks up, five stocks down. One in particular, Synchronous Technology. I can't pronounce her name for obvious reasons. Can you do it?
Synchronous.
Well, that sounds famous. Sounds
yeah,
a lot
simple.
Easier.
I like that.
They're using
that. That is the purpose of this report, is to catch this kind of stuff.
How to pronounce misspelled synchronous.
How to catch things that have deviations of 23% or
yeah.
whatever.
So this. Yeah, so we talked with the Legato guys before they came on, and this stock has been both the top performer and the worst performer kind of routinely, highly volatile. It's in the web-based cloud space.
So what we need to recognize in this, and the purpose of the report, is we have somebody speculating.
I'm not speculating.
I'm not saying you are. I'm saying there is a speculation going on within our stock market, and I would argue, gee, if you're underperforming, maybe speculating and trying is worthwhile for the individual, but not for the fund.
Yeah. What kind of words?
If I'm Legato,
I'm not sure it's a speculation.
It's not.
About.
It's
Acorn.
Whichever one is the
Acorn.
Yes.
Poor synchronous.
What kind of business is Acorn?
I believe, and I don't know this.
Oak trees.
Okay.
They change value that much?
I believe they're in the energy space, but John's
that's
got the
very valuable.
John's got the old intranet working there, so we'll see what he says.
The big fear is if we have somebody on watch and we're trying to decide what to do with them, and they want to gamble to try and either make it or fail, they pull us.
Yeah, I've read stories about that. Now I know what you're talking about.
Good. That's the purpose of this report, is to catch that.
Purpose of the report.
One
to raise alerts, to raise questions.
I'm doing it as best I can.
They just
okay.
John will interrupt me when he finds out what Acorn does.
Generic pharmaceuticals.
She beat you.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Generic pharmaceuticals?
That's what it said.
So, a biotech.
Because we want to see if anything's really shaking up.
That's a big move.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very big move.
4 months of minus 23, you won't have to worry about.
Right.
No, we won't have to make a decision. But we will make a decision before that.
Yeah.
Two international managers, both LSV and Pyramus, having very strong months out of the gate. Other top 10s, 8 out of 10 holdings, being pretty strong. You see some good performers in there. Nestle, that's also one that I keep seeing crop up amongst other managers. It's an old name, but it's becoming a darling at the moment.
They
moved to Nestle. Did they? You're joking. It's dangerous to be sitting next to you. Okay, that's it.
I have a question, and maybe this goes back to my first meeting. Is the definition of excess returns, why wouldn't it have the cost of the fund in there, our cost and their profit and fees? How can there be an excess if you don't include the total cost? So.
So you
is this
earn,
like institutional
you earn
this
the money
yeah.
that you paid.
Yeah, there's because different investors will pay different fees for the same portfolio.
Right.
So if you're trying to compare managers, a lot of times they'll look at it's a tradition to look at gross. But obviously, what really matters to you is you can't spend gross returns because you can only spend net returns.
Right.
So And it's been the case that most universes, when you try and compare managers, compare funds, they do it on a gross of fees basis because they just wouldn't collect it. So it's been more, the data hasn't been there to compare across funds, across managers on a gross of fee basis, on a net of fee.
Mike, we do put that stuff out every quarter.
We are the value-added report.
That, and along with all the other stuff that we put out every quarter.
Yep.
So we do see that on a quarterly basis.
There's, we're moving more and more towards gross or net.
Yeah.
There's starting to be
universes.
Net universes, which at some point will be the de facto.
If I can kind of take you off a little tangent here, okay? And if you looked at my resume, one of the things I'm on is on the GIPS, technical committee, and they just introduced a guidance statement for asset owners.
What does GIPS stand for?
Global Investment Performance Standards. Okay.
I know what it stands for.
Sorry about that. So it's a CFA, kind of organization sponsored standard. Okay, you always expect all your managers to be GIPS compliant. I mean, it's just a bunch of standards that they use to present performance to their clients and to their prospects. Okay, it was always generally intended to be for managers. Well, now we've come up with a guidance statement that says, okay, this is how you would do it if you were an asset owner, somebody like you. Okay, well, one of the things we did is within GIPS for money managers, I'll call it GIPS for money managers, they can report gross performance, but then they've got to say, oh, and by the way, here's a footnote that says the fee is going to be 50 basis points or something like that, but you figure out the net performance. When we did this for asset owners, we said there's one required number if you want to become GIPS compliant as an asset owner, and it's full net. Okay, that's the number we say you need to report so that there's true comparability. So the world is moving more and more towards net numbers are what's important, and net numbers are going to become better, more and more important, and we'll get there.
And even those net numbers, they wouldn't necessarily include custodian fees, right?
Actually, the net number we say you should do is net of management fees, net of custodian fees, net of staff fees, net of everything. So it's, you're managing this portfolio. You need to figure out, well, how much does it cost you in aggregate and create a performance net of all costs.
Am I in there?
So we took it even further than what you really think would be there.
Is that going to, reflect all the bonuses that staff get?
What?
Should.
Well, not you, staff. Their staff.
Yeah. But what you find out is all those staff fees are usually pretty small relative to the
staff fees are.
Not the big guys.
They're kind of rounding error almost on the returns on most portfolios, but we still. So you need to address them.
What about the difference in, maybe I misunderstood when you said staff fees, what about the difference in cost of Stan Sarah's staff having to manage, say, all our alternative portfolio versus a passive portfolio? Is that?
Right. That's kind of the idea, is to capture all those characteristics. And it's also to capture, you've got somebody like CalPERS that's got a staff of 300. Okay? You got to capture that as part of the fees to man of or the costs of managing the portfolio, versus somebody like you where you got two or three or
But it's kind of unfair. I can see a Stan Sarah size fund getting marginalized in that kind of comparison because staff here are Swiss Army knives. They're doing a lot of different things. They're providing a lot of value and more avenues than just investments.
No, but some staff spend a considerable amount of time on the investment governance process.
Right.
Quite a bit. Actually.
Yeah. So it's got to be a judgment of what, how much, if you're holding multiple hats, some of this process is going to be, well, how do you allocate the costs? But, and just to put in a plug here, I actually have a presentation at the upcoming SECRS meeting on this topic.
Hold on.
How exciting. Okay.
All right.
Thanks for your time. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions?
36 minutes, Nate.
Gibbs.
We Blame it on the Gibbs.
Yes, exactly. Blame it on me.
Okay, but we don't have an attorney today that is ready for the closed session, so it's going to go fast for you.
Hint?
Unless you're prepped.
Yeah, no, there's nothing new.
You have a dissertation?
He didn't even know why. No, I do not.
Your chance for a presentation. Nothing to do.
Yeah, I'll be one of those rare attorneys who chooses not to speak.
Oh.
Not on the other hand.
All right, then that'll take us to members forum.
Nothing for me.
You're on the spot.
Yeah. I have nothing.
Nothing. Other than I welcome Jeff back to our board.
I'll second that.
Thank you, and.
You should see all the stuff you were nominated for.
Kelly and I have been discussing that I'm going to take my lump and stay all the way to about however late on Friday it is. At Saturday. So one of us might hear yours.
Actually, it's on Wednesday. Wednesday.
You almost got nominated for the president of Saturday.
Darren was really pushing for that one. He was the only one.
He wanted to leave with a bang.
I don't really have anything, otherwise you think Jeff should be president of Saturday.
I second that.
It wouldn't be good for Saturday.
All in favor. Gordon.
Pass.
I'm done, thanks.
We were expecting and did receive the three proposals for our finance auditors, so I have some for Jeff to read. Before he leaves, I'll be handing this off to him.
Can't get away.
I think I missed something when we were discussing Legato. Did we want to discuss them in May or August?
I thought we had decided in August.
Okay. I thought we went to May.
What?
Let's see, I'm confused.
We're going to review it, but further discuss, I mean, we're just going to see
kinda
what the returns
are. Kind of depends
on
what you give us, I guess.
Well, we're gonna see every month.
Right,
what
right.
What they're doing. Yes, but we will see the big picture every quarter.
I think let's make a thumbs up, thumb downs decision in August.
Okay.
In August.
Are we all on board with that?
Well, unless the numbers are really bad because they're speculating,
so let's,
then I'd say you've got to be ready to move.
I'll tell you what, I'll make a judgment call after I see the first quarter results.
Because I don't think it's the case, but I very much worry about somebody saying, well, gosh, I might as well flip a coin at this stage. I'm either in or out. And you could lose a lot of money that way.
Well, Nate, is that something you guys can look further into specifically? Those
well, he just wants to know whether you want an action item in May or not.
Yeah.
And I'm saying it depends on what you face.
Well, you make the agenda. So you can put it on the agenda if you think we ought to talk about it.
Right.
Yeah. 3 days in advance.
Nothing else?
Okay, nothing for me. So with that, we are adjourned.